For the latest news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring the Boston Bash Brigade, visit our website at www.b3crew.com.
Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/BostonBash Brigade. Follow us on Twitter under our respective pen names.
And don't forget to check out the rest of the Land of Esh programming, including the Electric Sisterhood, Geek Aggro, and the Issues program.
When the sisters are away, the bastards will play. It's time for the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Episode 160. Think of your sins, Mr. Bond.
Bastards and wenches, please rise for the Boston National Anthem.
Bastards and Wednesdays, may be seated, and welcome to another episode of the Boston Bastard Brigade. I'm King Davy Duck.
I'm Blue Onyx.
And before we go into the main show and everything, I just want to quickly touch on something that you might have seen on the news this past Tuesday. Everybody was talking about it. You couldn't turn on a television without seeing it, of course.
Anal bleeding?
No, I'm talking about the big news that everyone's talking about on that Tuesday. People are out on the streets cheering, going crazy. I am, of course, talking about...
crack cocaine.
Dave Grohl rejoining Queens of the Stone Age!
Yeah, of course.
So, it has been announced that, for some reason, Joey Castillo, the current drummer of Queens of the Stone Age, has left the band.
Wow.
So, Josh gave Dave a call and asked, and Dave...
now, politely. He asked politely.
Yes, he asked politely, and he said, yeah, I'll come back, because as some people know...
Yeah. The Foo Fighters are not going to... are taking a break or something along those lines.
Yeah.
It's kind of scary, but whatever.
I originally thought that this was like Dave Grohl hinting on the fact that he was going to run for office or something.
Yeah, right. Good luck with that.
I actually think he would do decently.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You know, when they said Hulk Hogan was running for president, did anybody take him seriously?
No.
Exactly. I mean, besides Jesse Ventura actually becoming, like, a governor or something?
Yep.
Yeah, that was scary. So, yeah.
But, as some people know, too, Dave Grohl did the drums on 2002 Songs for the Death.
Yep.
And a lot of people consider that to be, like, the breakthrough album for Queens of the Stone Age. That made them
into mainstream. But not only that, he, like, you know, Josh Homme was also on Them Crooked Vultures, which had... Grohl as drummer, so they're kind of really, like, you know, tight-knit. I don't think he would have said no.
No.
There's no way. He likes, you know, Queens of the Stone Age that much, so he'd be gladly, you know, to support them with the whole drumming.
Right. And they're saying that the new album is going to be out before their Download Festival appearance, which is in June.
Oh,
so cool. We could probably expect this within the next couple months or so.
Oh, fantastic.
So I'm very excited. That also means that next time Queens of the Stone Age are in town, Dave Grohl could probably be behind the drum kit.
Sweet deal.
Which would be awesome to see again, because Blonick and I saw Them Crooked Vultures right before their first album came out, and what a great show that was.
See, that was the thing about that was, you didn't even need to know the lyrics to the songs, because, like, you really didn't hear, you heard maybe a couple of them beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
All, like, that whole album is just... good. They're, like, I can only say, like, maybe one song was a little bit off to me at that time, but now that I listen to it, it's an awesome song.
I think you're referring to Interlude with Ludes, probably.
That trippy one. That trippy one, yeah, but besides that, I mean, they were incredible to see, especially see John Paul Jones rocking the basses that he had. It was gorgeous. Mm.
Especially that slide bass guitar that was so massive.
Yeah, and... he had two of them. Like, one was there was like 12 strings or something like that. It was ridiculous. Amazing.
It is. And the fact that Dave and Josh are back together again for this album for Queens of the Stone Age, it gives me hope that we're going to get another explosive album out of both of them.
Oh, definitely.
Because, don't get me wrong, like, I love Air Vulgaris, I love Lullabies of Paralyzed, but it was Songs for the Deaf. That was the album that just got me into Queens of the Stone Age.
Anything more on that basis?
Nick Livery?
Yeah, the bald guy.
You see, that's
he got arrested, right?
He got arrested, but he got probation.
Oh, okay. Well, that's kind of, you know, that's the thing that's tough about that. He must, if they have really good lawyers, at least he could probably, you know, because of the fact that if he's a traveling band member and stuff like that too,
mm-hmm.
if you get probation, you can't really go outside of your things. You got to keep in close contact. So he,
yeah,
I think he's gonna have to take a break for a little while.
Yeah, he probably will.
Play some local shows and that's it.
Yeah.
But anyways.
So, now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's jump right into the video game section of our show. And there were three demos. Well, two demos and one arcade game that I downloaded the trial version for that came out. And the first was a game that I was able to go hands-on with at E3 this year. Epic Mickey 2, The Power of Two.
Power of Dos.
Dos tequilos. So, in this game, you find out that the Wastelands, which is the areas where all of Disney's forgotten characters lives. And you come to find out that there's some more trouble brewing, and you find out that the Mad Doctor, who was the antagonist in the first video game, is, well, presumably not behind this one. In fact, he's saying, we've got to help me, these monsters that I created, and from the first title, are back on the loose and trying to destroy everything, and I've tried to change my ways, and I want you to help me to destroy these characters.
Fantastic.
So one of the let's see, what's the character? Oswald the Rabbit. He goes off with the Mad Doctor, and the cat, his girlfriend, summons Mickey and brings him back to the Wastelands of sorts.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I didn't get to play the first one. Now that's probably one of my biggest problems right now is because I didn't know what was going on, and I thought that Oswald was a bad character in the first place. And
he was, but then he like just kind of sort of changed his ways halfway through.
I mean, I'd be pissed off if I was probably one of the first creations and Mickey gets all the fucking glory.
Right,
I'd be pissed.
Well, you can blame that on Universal Studios because they were the ones that told Walt Disney. Sorry, but according to this contract, we're the ones that own Oswald now. You don't have any control over Oswald now.
Congratulations, asshat. But yeah, for the most part, the playing of the actual game and stuff like that, it was kind of interesting to play because you got the dual aspect of the paintbrush, even though it kind of reminds me of Portal, where you got one that could actually paint in the objects that are needed to, or otherwise take them away when you've got the, what is that one, the other side called there?
The thinner.
Yeah, the paint thinner version. So, yeah, I mean, from getting to play this, you know, for the little demo aspect, is this the same demo that they had at E3?
Actually, no.
Really?
The demo that I got to play, you had to face off against this mechanical dragon. You had to, like, climb up this giant tower in order to let loose some of, like, the mechanical, or let loose some of the paint thinner to help destroy it.
Oh, okay, I got you.
Sorry, right? I remember playing it on the Xbox 360 version at E3. Now, the one thing that I'm still trying to get over is the control aspect, because when you're playing with the Wii version, it is a lot easier to just point and aim and shit.
Yeah.
Whereas
I agree with that, because I was kind of saying, oh, yeah, this seems definitely developed for, like, a Wii kind of controller or something along those lines, so I don't know if they're going to do anything with the Kinect. I doubt it, though.
They're not, but I know the PlayStation Move version is going to be using that.
Yeah, of course.
So, sadly, Microsoft badly did a little messed up here when it came to motion controls. They should have just went with the flow at least. But the Kinect is good for some games.
Yeah.
So, in this demo, you find the Magic Brothers, you locate Oswald in the Wasteland, and you gotta escape from this crumbling castle. And you gotta use this whole teamwork aspect in order to, you know, defeat everything, or to solve all the puzzles. So, case in point, there's one area where I've gotta toss up, or you've gotta toss up one of us.
Yeah, well, we got to play it again together this morning and stuff like that, so we were able to toss one another up to one section that just broke down. And that got us to move on to the next part. Then we kind of got stuck at this one point where we were trying to figure out how to do that. But apparently, this son of a bitch who's controlling Oswald didn't walk close enough to the generator thing to create the electric field to get both of them.
Yeah.
Jerk face.
Sorry.
I kill you.
But yeah, I forgot about how Oswald had that sort of power. So there is a lot of the puzzle solving. There's some things you got to do simultaneously. So there is that whole power of two that's kind of like thrown in your face from the title.
Oh, definitely.
So this was, the one thing that I was really happy about with this game is in the Wii first game, like there was no real voice acting or anything. Everything was just like garble speak, like.
Oh god, they did that in the first one?
Yeah.
I would have automatically walked away from the game because I can't stand it anymore. Like, okay, back in the day when we were playing, and I was like, oh, this would be fantastic if the characters could talk, but I understand that they don't have the capabilities of, you know, doing the voice actors because that would take up too much memory.
Yeah. It makes me think of, remember in Banjo-Kazooie? When Banjo-Kazooie
Or when you're playing Crash Bandicoot, the only thing you can make those damn evil bastards say is "booga booga." That's it.
Yeah. So fortunately, everyone who voices the original characters that are still alive, mind you, has voiced all the characters in this game. And for the character of Oswald, they got Frank Welker, who's a very, very...
Is it related to Wes Welker?
No.
Oh, damn it.
He's a very well-known voice actor. You might know him as the speaking voice for Nibbler on Futurama.
Oh, yeah, that little asshole that, like, eats everything in sight.
Yep. But he's done a lot of other things, but I know him more as Nibbler. It's hard to really just to compare the graphics between the two, because it has this cartoon
elements.
Wii is
Wii, you know?
I know, but for me personally, I really don't see much of a difference. Like, I don't know if it's because... Well, how HD can Mickey Mouse get that sort of aspect of it?
No, you gotta make him even more cartoonistic and real. I'm talking about like when they did Roger Rabbit, the movie. I want him to be popping out like that in real life.
Okay, I can kind of see where you're going with for that one. The demo only lasted, what, like 20, 25 minutes? Because I know we had to stop because we had to start recording the show.
Yeah, we had to start recording the show because of running around and doing stuff lately. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, the demo does give you a good chunk of time to play. I mean, you get to check around the world and whatnot that's right there in front of you. Mm-hmm. It's a perfect little demo to, you know, kind of just grab you and say, buy the game, damn you! Buy it! So more or less, I could suggest that, yeah, this game would be probably perfect for, you know, not just kids, but, you know... Fans of the original, and then... Hell, if you're a babysitter or something along those lines, you buy this game and the kids aren't total little bastards, you might be able to play it with them because it has a co-op aspect to it. So.
Right. And what's good is, with this demo, you can start getting used to the Xbox or PlayStation 3 controls if you don't have like the PlayStation Move.
Yeah, exactly.
Because this is coming out for those. It's coming out for the Wii U, and I believe you can use the Wiimote for that. I don't know if it's coming out for the regular Wii, though.
I'm still disappointed in the demo selection from Wii, though. Like, they still haven't given much,
you know, yeah.
Wii demo setup. So.
Yeah, I think they're going to be fixing that with the Wii U.
I freaking hope so.
Yeah. For this demo, I could probably give it a good, like, 4.6 out of 5. I really enjoyed it. It really brought me back to the original Epic Mickey video game. And I'm just really looking forward to seeing what this next chapter of Epic Mickey is going to bring for us.
Yeah, I'll give it a 4.3 just due to the aspect of sometimes it didn't explain what you're supposed to do. I mean, I know I'm not trying to have it so it's like, here, you got to go here, do this, 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 this. No, I'm saying, like, it should have told us to go closer to that object to take care of that situation instead of just say, you know, like, right trigger. It's like, what the hell am I supposed to do with the right trigger? And I've been doing it for, like, 5 minutes now, so... More or less, just a little bit more explanation on that, but besides that, yeah, that's perfectly fine.
Okay.
It's a good game.
Nice. So, it's kind of funny how last week you were doing this review for F1 2012, for a demo that came out for weeks earlier, because this past week, another Codemasters Racing demo has come out, but it's a little bit different from what we're used to.
It's like freaking Mario Kart.
Yeah. We're talking, of course, about F1 Race Stars, and it's It feels like that now that Code Master just said, all right, we've conquered the realistic racing. Let's see if we can get the little kiddie-style kart racing into our little forte.
My concept is they did it, but I'm just wondering how they didn't get sued by Nintendo because it's almost like it. But I feel like the movement on it is a little bit better, but you gotta make sure that, you know, when you're racing those go-kart style Formula One cars, that you take the turns properly, or otherwise you're gonna end up at the wall.
Yeah, which is what happened to me a bunch of times, because you put it up to 3,000.
That's 3,000 Cs, yeah.
Yeah, I was on 1,000 when I first did the demo.
You gotta be kidding me. I go all the way.
Yeah, I know you go all the way.
On the racing, it's awesome.
Yes. So, for this demo, they gave you a two-lap race in Germany, and it gave you four cars and races to choose from, but you could also use your avatar for the demo.
Yeah, that's true.
And when I was playing this, I don't know about you, but I couldn't help but think of that other racing game that I was raving about last year, the Jimmy Johnson's Anything with an Engine.
Yes.
Not just from, you know, the graphical standpoint, the car racing standpoint, but for the strategy standpoint as well. Because when it comes to, you know, kart racing, sometimes you've got to figure out when you should use the weapons or the power-ups and such. And, like in Jimmy Johnson, there were the pit stops.
Yeah, there was the pit stops, but the only other thing is you got to take into fact that Mario Kart has done almost everything to karting in the first place, but to have Jimmy Johnson come along and do his game, it was unique in its own way because of the characters themselves. This game doesn't have any uniqueness to the characters themselves with the karts, because the karts are just Formula One racing cars, and then
the racers are actual racers.
Are actual racers, besides, you know, using your own avatar. But if you go and, you know, you're running over a star-like thing, you know, you pick up a weapon, and then you shoot off the weapon. It's almost like the other car game there. It was done a while back. That was supposed to be more realistic, but it was...
Blur?
Blur, yeah. That one kind of... Yeah.
You don't like talking about it.
That was the thing. It's kind of like from watching all the guys talk from the actual gaming company, I thought they were going to do a lot more with the game and then also add on to it. And, you know, I might have been missing some add-ons or something like that. But when I was actually playing the game, I was like, this is mediocre at best. I mean, yes, yeah. I can race it, but yet, you know, if you're racing hard and somebody EMPs your car, you're like, fuck my life, because that just totally ruins you and drops you on the way back. So you're like... It's kind of one of those things where if the right moment, you know, comes along, you could use that stuff. But when somebody uses it on you, not so much fun.
Right. Well, remember, too, that was the exact same time when another racing game came out that was a lot better. And I'm talking about Split Second.
Split Second is definitely another horse of a different color because of the fact that you're not just... it's not like go-kart racing. It's real car racing, but yet you build up, you know, the power... That's your nitro, but if you don't use the nitro and you use it at the right second to drop towers or whatever to blow up your competition, that's an interesting way of racing. I like that, and I don't know. I wish that, you know, was it Disney Interactive
that
closed? Yeah, Disney Interactive.
Yeah, but well, that didn't close. It was the what was it called? Black Mountain Studios.
I think that did. But yeah, that was a damn good game, and I feel bad that had to happen. But I mean, I still want to go and probably purchase Need for Speed Most Wanted.
Yeah, I heard good things about that one.
See, like, that's the thing is I played Need for Speed Hot Pursuit, and I love the shit out of that game. If I go, damn, I'm bored, that's probably one of the first games I go back to besides Rocksmith. Mm-hmm. And I literally just, I pop it in, and I love it because you can just go over, either be the police officers or the racers. But back to Formula One. This one, it's simplistic. It's probably for the kiddies, more or less. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't know any of the racers because of the fact that it's Formula One.
Right. It's not like NASCAR.
Yeah, even if they did NASCAR, I doubt even half the kids would know unless they were from the
redneck areas.
Redneck nation of NASCAR. Oh my God, it's Jimmy Johnson! Shut up! but yeah, for the most part, not because I won. I want to say probably with the rating on this one, probably 4.7.
Yeah,
it's easily said because of the fact that, I mean, I love racing games. Codemasters, I mean, they're able to do so much. I mean, I have had a couple issues with them once in a while, but they've done a very good job with the racing genre. I still want to go and play the Dragon, the Operation Flashpoint or something like that, Dragon, something like that. I forget what it was. They've done a couple of, like, shooter games or something.
Yeah, like I remember they did that mediocre one that came out last year. What was it? The
I think it was that one I was talking about, but... but I mean, for the most part, I'm just trying to say that, like, I want to see what else, you know, they could do, and I'm looking forward to Grid 2.
I want
Grid 2 now.
As repeated from last week's episode.
No! Grid 2 now.
You want Grid 2. Okay. So, one of the Xbox Live Arcade channel that came out that I know Bluonic didn't get a chance to play, but maybe he should be lucky about that.
Hey, great. I won't have an aneurysm. It'll just come out my ass.
Yeah, it's called Karateka, and it's a third-person side-scroller remake from the creator of Prince of Persia, Jordan Mechner.
Mechner?
Now, this game originally came out back in the days of, like, Commodore 64 and... back in the days of CGA graphics, before EGA, before VGA, before all this real stuff. And a lot of people loved it. It was a very popular title. It's still got a bit of a cult following here and there. So he himself said, you know what, I want to remake this game, and I'm going to see to it, I'm going to watch over it, I'm going to make it the best game out there possible in the series. I want this to be the next... I want to do to this what I did with Prince of Persia.
Okay.
So...
he failed.
Yeah. Why does it feel like that he wasn't watching over this whole game? Why does it feel like that he had nothing to do with this game? Why does it feel like that all he did was, hey, here's some money, enjoy, let's see you do something.
That's the idea I want. You gotta do it, or otherwise, prepare to die. I'm gonna go play some golf.
Yeah. So there's apparently, like, this princess that you've got to rescue from her evil father's clutches. And you...
Super Mario Brothers.
and you've got to run through the kingdom and battle out every guard you see.
Link?
No.
This is close. This is what I'm getting here.
No. Yeah, yes. Here's where the first problem happens in the game. When you face off with someone, you can't just automatically throw punches and stuff. You have to wait till the guard throws the punch, you block, and then you start wailing on the person. It doesn't give you any sort of opening whatsoever for you to hit a person whatsoever.
Okay, so stealth kills are out?
Yes.
What the fuck?
There is no stealth at all. There's no stealth. You just walk down the little path. You see the other guy there. You try to kick his ass. Move on. Then here comes the next guy. You kick his ass. And then you move on to the next guy. And he kicks your ass. And you're going to start all over again like I did.
That sounds... and don't hold this against me, people. I mean, I love all of our listeners and everything like that, but... I have a serious issue with the whole aspect of the turn-based games, especially Final Fantasy. And yes, you could crucify me later for that, but it's just one of those concepts. If, you know, I wish I could explain it just like how, Clerks 2 did explain about the Lord of the Rings.
Randall.
Yeah, Randall. Because the fact is, it's like you take like about 4 or 5 steps in the game. And then, oh no, battle! And it has, like, the two fucking asshole falcon-type things. You kill them, and then you walk another 5 feet, and you kill the same fucking falcons, but different colors. Mm-hmm. It pisses me off. Yes, great. Fantastic. You can keep walking back and forth and killing stuff, building up all your power and stuff like that, just to obtain some kind of powerful sword or something later on in the game. Just so you can kill whatever later on with one blow. That's just not what I'm all about. I can't do it.
I'll be honest with you. I'm the same way, too. Like, I like RPGs. But I don't like the turn-based ones because I get bored with it. I get bored.
See, okay. The thing about me is I suck at math. I really do. And that's one of my issues with those games because it's so math-based. And I can't do it because they're like, 5,000 divided by 2,000. And I'm like, I could... could you just shut the fuck up and play the game so I can understand what's going on? And I've sat there, and it felt like my fucking brain was going to fall on my skull from my eyes. So, like, it's just gooed and just... And because of the fact that my friends were like, yeah! And I'd be like, okay, I'm going home. Fuck you guys. I'm going to go play some Call of Duty or Modern Warfare or something on my PC.
Yeah.
Because that's how it was. I just couldn't get into it. So that's why I kind of walked away from that group. Because of the fact that you guys got to acknowledge that, yes, you're so enthralled with the game, but you got to acknowledge that your friends are in the room. And if they don't like that kind of game, yeah, it's either get new friends or...
turn off the game.
Yeah, turn off the game.
Because when it comes to like RPG games, like I like the type that it's like the best example I can think of is Tales of Symphonia, where it's got the RPG elements into it, but it's not turn based. When you get into battle, you can hack and slash and just do as many melee battles as possible.
I don't know if it's counted as that Metal Gear Solid. Is that almost turn based RPG?
No, that's tactical action stealth.
I still feel like it's an art roleplay type game because of how like they design it. Like I feel like the third video camera view and how to run around. I mean, Darkheart, who's recently moved into my home, mm-hmm. has been playing Dante's Inferno.
Dark Souls?
No. What's that one? Devil May Cry.
Devil May Cry.
He bought the 3 series with the revamped graphics and everything like that. And I see him running around doing the hack and slash stuff, and it's great and all that, but I feel like that would probably get boring for me after a while. I can't do it.
Unless there's a sort of variety that's thrown into it. I mean,
the only variety that I saw was different colors on the characters again. It's just one of those things that I'm like, that's the same character that you just whipped the shit out of 5 levels ago. That was 2 seconds ago. What the hell is this?
At least in something like Lollipop Chainsaw, you've got different ways you can do.
Well, yeah, you get different ways to hack and slash. But I mean, it's just mind numbing sometimes. But, mm-hmm. but back to this game. What? So besides the whole concept of yet again, there's a princess.
Yeah.
Trying to save somebody. You can't kick anybody's ass. You gotta let them throw the first punch so you can. It's almost like the American the American setup. You gotta wait until they shoot at you first before you shoot at them.
Right.
So. Yeah.
And it looks more like a PlayStation 2 game than an Xbox Live Arcade title.
Okay.
And the characters look like they're rejects from Disney's Mulan.
God, people stop gonna do doing drugs. It's too much now.
This is just a really bad remake. Like, I know you weren't a fan of Double Dragon Neon.
It wasn't as fantastic as it could have been. I mean, great. There's hookers trying to kill you with whips and chains and stuff like that. And the graphics were decent. And it was a side-scroller. And it was all this other stuff. But sometimes you're like, maybe they could have done a little bit more. I don't know.
Right.
That's just me.
Okay, that's understandable. Because there are a lot of remakes out there that they do a fantastic job with. But if Jordan Mechner was hoping that this remake of Karateka was going to revamp his series, he's greatly mistaken. This is the wrong way to do a remake. He should have gone back to the people who made the Prince of Persia remakes and said, okay, I want to try this game out. Can you guys help me do it? And they probably would have made it fantastic.
Yeah.
When instead he went to an independent company, which, okay, sometimes independent companies tend to do things better because they don't have anything hovering over them telling them not to do something or to be controlled by something else.
It's not like 1984 where you got Big Brother over your fucking shoulder, so yeah.
Yeah, but in the case of this game, of Karateka, it's just bad. It's just terrible. And it is one of, like... It's not just a misstep. It's like... Say that you, like, set up a trap. And, like, right underneath. Like a big giant hole. And you covered it up with leaves.
And you fell in it.
And you were the one that fell into it.
You could have just easily set a Vietnam trap because they pissed and shit on the bamboo roots that you'd fall into and you get, some kind of disease and die from it. So
yeah.
So basically that's probably the best setup. Just just think about it as Mr. Burns and the Simpsons, and then that at the bottom of the drop. Perfect. Fantastic. So you gave this negative zero. You know what? We haven't given a negative zero for a while. Come on, negative zero.
I'm going to give it
peer pressure.
Yes. I will give it a negative zero. It's garbage. Don't waste your time with it. Instead, why don't you go and download a better game that came out this past week, the return of Toe Jam and Earl. They revamped the first two games. They put it together as one. And it's like an arcade. It's part of Sega's arcade classic things. Download those, because the Toe Jam and Earl games are much better.
True.
And just skip this game entirely. Just say, fuck it. Don't bother. Don't traumatize yourself.
I'll give you the $5 challenge. You go on that game, you're able to play it for more than a half hour without puking or wanting to kill yourself. I'll give you $5. I know it's not a lot. You probably, you know, waste a lot of money just getting you the $5. But either way, I'll give you the $5.
Okay. All right, so now that video games is done, we can run into the movie that you and I got to see. The Return of James Bond. Skyfall. And it's been 4 years since we've seen a James Bond movie. Not since Quantum of Solace.
Has it been that long?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
It has been that long.
What was the one before that? How long was it before the other one?
It was 2006 when Casino Royale came out.
I love that movie. That movie is fucking great. Especially I love that part. Now, no homo on this part. But the whole aspect when the James Bond is captured, they have him butt-ass naked and his ass is through the chair, and the guy is whipping him with like the end of like a sailor, like I can't even remember the name of the what it was, but he's whipping him, and he goes, yeah, he's like, yeah, do one more to the left, and he goes and does it, and it's like, ha ha ha, you scratched my balls. So yeah, I think that was because like that's the humor that I was expecting more from Daniel Craig. I mean, there was humor in this movie,
yes.
Skyfall, but it wasn't as hysterical as that, I felt. I mean, there was some people that in the crowd, you know, I felt that there was a couple things coming, you know, near the end that I could foresee. What people were like when it was revealed, they were like, ah! And it was like, you're all idiots. Fuck you. And of course, I had to pick out the anagram that's in part of the movie, so if you could find it yourself.
Yes.
Good job.
So in this film, at first, it is presumed that James Bond dies during a mission. Because,
well, you see it in the trailer, basically. He's on top of the train. He gets shot accidentally by his own teammate, which he falls, what you think, to his death, but he ends up in the water and... Hey, cue the intro of the James Bond with, what's her name?
Adele.
Oh, Fanny McFatterton. Okay.
And then, it's a good song. Okay, I'll say it's a good song, but I just don't like Adele.
I'm surprised that her voice is actually as good as it was after the surgery she got.
Yeah. I still like the Jack White, Alicia Keys one better.
And I think I like the Chris Cornell one.
That was a good one, too.
That was a good one. I liked that version.
But I'm just saying, just comparing it.
I think there was less naked babes though in this trailer. I mean, they were shadowed, but it wasn't. You couldn't see nakedness.
Yeah.
So
he likes the nakedness.
Yes, I do.
We all like the nakedness.
Don't tell my girlfriend that.
In this one, we find out that this villain is more of a cyber terrorist.
Yeah,
kind of like Anonymous in some way.
I want to say more towards like how they did the version with Timothy Oliphant of Live Free or Die Hard.
Oh, okay.
So he kind of came in, he started havoc, and more or less his main mission, should we say it? Should we say his main mission?
Yes.
His main mission was to get Mom.
Yeah.
And if you don't know who Mom is, you need to learn how to watch some James Bond movies and figure out who the hell Mom is, jackass. So, she's been in it for, like, the longest of times.
Yeah.
I can't believe how long she's been in it.
She's been in it I wouldn't say decade and a half for...
Next to what's-his-name, who's played Quartermaster forever.
John Cleese?
Yeah, John Cleese. No, before that. There was the other one that would play Q.
Oh, The quartermaster.
Yeah. Yes, if you don't know what that meant, Q stands for quartermaster. Next to that, with the starting of this movie, I felt that there was pretty sufficient action. Even though, like, there's this whole part where James Bond comes checking out the room and stuff like that. People are laying on the floor. There's two dead on the floor. One still living on the on the couch. And he's like, no, wait, he's going to bleed out, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to try to save him. Of course, Mom has this whole thing where she's like, forget him. Get the hard drive back, because the hard drive consists of
all the MI6 agents.
Thank you. So with that said, they're trying to do the whole setup where, if that gets out on the internet, it's going to be bad. And it was bad, because a lot of the people that weren't taken back from their whole aspect got killed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who played the bad guy? I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but I've seen him in so many movies with Penelope Cruz.
He's your friendo pal.
Friendo pal. He's like, here, just stand right there for a second.
Javier Bardem.
Oh, God.
And I'm surprised at how good he was in this movie. Like, he's a great actor, but his English usually isn't on.
Yeah, I think he's originally a Spanish actor.
Yes.
Yeah, he's come a long way with his accent. So, but also like what his disfigurement is in the movie.
Oh yeah.
Kind of plays like he has that weird talk to him, so it plays with what happened to his disfigurement. So when you see that part, don't flip out. But it's really cool. I like how they did it. It was done very well for the graphics aspect of it.
Right.
It looked pretty real.
But let's just say that cyanide is not part of your balanced nutritious breakfast.
Exactly.
He's trying to go after M because
of that situation.
He felt like she left him to die. And he's finally built up enough revenue of sorts to seek out revenge against her and MI6.
But M does have a good reason why it was done. She traded him for 6 other agents. So sometimes, it's like the whole concept with the criminal justice system, basically. They'd rather let 10 bad people go out of the prison instead of murder one innocent person on the death row. That's basically their concept. I'm like, fantastic. You want psychos and shit running around instead of just putting people to death that need to die. But that's just me.
And our favorite, Ralph Fiennes, was back as of Garrett Malloy.
Was he in the other ones?
I think he was in the other ones.
I don't remember him too much. I thought he was too busy with Harry Potter. Or he was, he was just doing all these other movies and stuff like that. I swear he wasn't in the,
Yeah, let me check that. Yeah, actually, you're right. This is the first time we get to see him in James Bond, so I apologize for that. But it was a nice, because I didn't know he was in this movie. I didn't know he was in Skyfall here.
Yeah, I didn't see him really on the list right off the bat, so now that he's checked out the list, they probably pushed him up a little bit higher into it.
Mm-hmm.
He is, I'm telling you, he is a great actor. He's just amazing. He's able to do so much.
And then we've got the girl who accidentally shoots him, but thankfully didn't get any vital organ parts.
Yeah, we won't say her name. But anyways...
But it's Naomi Harris, who I know from 28 Days Later and from the Pirates of the Caribbean films.
Yeah, I loved her in the 28 Days Later, and yeah, she was awesome as the crazy,
Voodoo lady. Voodoo you voodoo.
Yeah. So, more or less, they did have a great cast in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It did go on for, 2.5 hours?
Yep. Oh, and it's funny because the other day I was thinking, whatever happened to this actor and he winds up showing up in this movie? And Albert Finney.
And who is Albert Finney?
He played the gamekeeper of the Skyfall Estate.
Oh, right.
But Albert Finney, for all of you musical lovers out there, he was Daddy Warbucks in the Annie film.
Oh, okay.
You were talking about the whole action element, and I've always felt like James Bond was never about the action. It was about getting to the action. It was like trying to get... It was the journey to get to point B from point A that made the series all the more interesting. So if you're going into this film,
Yeah, like, see, sometimes when I've gotten into the James Bond film, I'm expecting shoot 'em up. I really do. Like, the movie Shoot 'em Up.
Yeah.
I'm expecting Clive Owen to be running across the screen, shooting at people, killing people with carrots, and just doing whatever the hell he does best just to kill everybody. This one is like, they kind of ran around. Like, the first part was run around, try to grab the guy, and Bond get injured, and then it has, like, this... It doesn't tell you, like, right off the bat that it was 3 months after the fact, but it's 3 months after the fact.
Yeah.
And they're like, he's been... quote unquote dead, you know, so more or less it kind of dragged on a little bit for me on that part, but, you know, I guess more or less it does play a big role in it because you got to kind of get more involved with the character because of you got to figure out where he's coming from. I'm telling you, when he comes back, he looks like shit. And I mean, that's because he's been sucking on the fucking bottle for 3 months straight. So, when you see Daniel Craig, and you had that Rolling Stones magazine. When you see Daniel Craig, yeah, it's on the other side, but whatever. I'm saying, you look at Daniel Craig, he looks absolutely gorgeous on the front cover of it. And then you see him in this one, he's got the pink underneath his eyes, he looks like he got punched in the face a couple more times. He's got the beard out, he's just not his... sexy 007 self.
It feels like this movie was trying to showcase that the era of Bond is getting a little bit old, but at the same time, it showcases why we need someone like Bond in MI6.
I mean, it happened 50 years of Bond. So
yes. More or less. If you really watch this movie too, you will see the nods, the 50-year-old scotch that Javier Bardem was drinking down.
Yep, and then there's the...
The car.
The Aston Martin comes back into play. It was the old version, not like, yes. You know, this is one that wasn't tagged and everything like that. It was beautiful for them to bring that back. But yeah, now I can see why they did that whole 4-year span, because let's put it this way. If they were trying to do this movie within the 2-year aspect of after doing the other one, then that means they would have had to try to complete another movie, and I don't know if Daniel Craig would have had it in him just to do that one, just to get it done before the 50-year anniversary.
Yeah.
So it would have been very hard. But I think that probably spanning it from the 4 years made it much better.
And I'm just very impressed by how they were to keep to the original formation of James Bond. I mean, he's not the ladies' man as he used to be back in the old days. He wasn't like...
He only got laid once in this movie. Yeah, that's it. He only got laid once.
Yep, he only...
So less...
No, chance. Twice.
Wait, when was this twice?
The first time was... When he was dead.
Oh, right. Well, yeah, okay, fine, twice. Fantastic, fine.
But in the old days, you get laid, what, 6, 7, 8 times within a 30-minute?
All I could say was there's a lot of herpes and gonorrhea going around because of him. But, or syphilis, which I'm surprised because there is a running gag about this. It's basically, he's immune to all sexual diseases. He could just pick one girl out of the crowd and it could be the most... whorish-looking girl, or just the worst one, all out of them, and he will not get into diseases.
Yep.
God damn him.
And you've got to be impressed, too, with the technology they use. Like, the whole, it wasn't a thumbprint, it's a palm print.
Well, yeah, that actually has been coming into play recently. I mean, it's not as new as, I mean, well, yeah, you know how shoot 'em up it was.
Yes.
It was when you grip it, it was the thumbprint on the side of the gun. But yeah, there are a lot more towards technology now, towards weaponry that actually has that set up, because, I mean, how stupid it is if you're in a gunfight or if you're in a close quarters combat, somebody's able to pull your pistol out and they use it on you. It happens
yes.
a lot on, it's happened to police officers, it happened to military, it's happened to a lot of people. But if you have that signature to your gun or, you know, whatever, it would be a lot better. It's one of those things, you know?
Yeah.
But, I'm thinking that they could probably do a lot more with that technology, especially with the aspect of friendly fire.
Yeah, that too.
Because of the fact that, you know, they could put it on your units and stuff like that, and so when the gun gets pointed towards one of your people with your units, the gun
won't go off,
so...
Yeah, that is a good idea.
It's a brilliant idea, but trying to do it is kind of a pain in the ass, and if the other group gets the technology, nobody's going to be able to shoot anybody.
Probably not. Not without a little hacking here and there.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, back to this movie. It was definitely done very well. And if you're willing to sit there for 2.5 hours, yeah, this movie seems that it's worth it. I did have a couple of little issues here and there, but
like with what? What were some of your issues in the film?
Great, you have to ask me that, right?
Yes. Our listeners want to know.
There was a little bit of parts that dragged on a bit. There were certain people that were in it that
weren't explained properly.
Maybe just a little bit, but towards the end, it kind of explained it a little bit more, and it was kind of like, okay, fine. But also, I'm kind of like, there's another thing that I'm also kind of missing here. Like I was saying while we're eating earlier, I was saying in the aspect that if you look at the Bond, he's 007. The only other 00 that we dealt with was back with Pierce Brosnan, and that was Sean Bean. He was 006.
Yes.
So I'm trying to figure out where all the other 00s have been since 1 through 7. And I'm wondering if there's any way that they could maybe make another movie section of all those other ones or something, a short story. I don't care, but that's just one of those things that I'm feeling like they're missing.
You know, they could probably explain it in the next movie, the next James Bond. What if the next James Bond film has him teaming up with 1 through 6 in some fashion?
1 through 5, because 6 was killed.
Oh, that's right.
But maybe that's what the other thing is all the other ones were killed, that's why they need to get to 007, so...
That too.
I don't know. It's one of those things that's never been answered for me to really to figure out what the hell happened to the other ones. But more or less, that whole for the whole setup of this movie, I wish there was. I don't know. I felt there could have been just a wee bit more action, just a tad bit more, and I would have been okay. But I mean, Daniel Craig, yet again, badass. He's really good at doing it, being the blonde Bond that he is.
And that's the thing. When they first announced him back in, 2005 or late 2004, people were, in such an uproar that, oh, it looks nothing like all the other Bonds. It doesn't have the haircut. He doesn't need to. He's proven himself worthy of the James Bond title.
He basically proved himself when I saw him do the movie Layer Cake.
Yes.
Layer Cake was an absolutely beautiful thing. And when he did that movie, I was like, yeah, he could do something. I think that he could be like another Bourne movie or something along those lines. But lo and behold, he ended up in the realm of 007.
I remember when he was doing, what's it called? The first Lara Croft Tomb Raider movie.
Oh, yeah.
I figured that...
When he's walking around naked with a gun and he scares the... made, and of course she pops up behind him.
I felt like, well, not that scene specifically, but in that film, I felt like Daniel Craig was slowly turning into, you know, a lead action man of sorts.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'm very happy with the way he's treated the whole James Bond franchise. He's treated it with care, and it's one of those things where he doesn't really screw over the fan base in any way. Because the way I look at it is this. There's so many actors that have, portrayed James Bond that... I was thinking about this during the movie. What if, it's been, the same James Bond in some way, but still dragged over time. But each time that they replace an actor, they really go so far as to, facial reconstruction, so like he's been recognized too much.
Yeah.
Now we've got to change his face.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I like to think of how each James Bond actor comes.
They replace Q. They replace Q with the younger kid now instead. So that means that kid could go on this role for the longest friggin' time now, and not just shunned off or whatever.
Right.
So it's I feel like if I was running a movie set or something like that. Because of the fact that a lot of actors have died, while recording stuff, and it's just been one of those things, it would be probably a pet peeve of mine, saying how they dealt with the aspect on...
Heath Ledger and Imaginary Man Dr. Parnassus?
That too, that was one of those ones where that was very creative how they did that one. The other thing I was thinking was that show that was on, is it Showtime or Stars or...
Spartacus?
Yeah, Spartacus. When they did Spartacus, the main character who played Spartacus in season one had died of cancer. So it's one of those things where I think after you say, hey, this person would be perfect. All right, get in line and see the doctor. They're going to rob a glove you. You know, it's just because it's one of those things because you don't know how long. That happened in The Matrix.
Yeah.
You know, and they had to explain that by, I did some stuff and... and it ended up to be the way I am. I am still the same person, but blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That must have been a writer's nightmare. But, you know, it's just one of those things that they were able to take care of. But with this movie, I want to say, let's put a nail on a coffin right now with this thing. And I want to say, do you want to give a rating or do you want to...
I can give this a solid 4.5 out of 5. It's definitely one of the... It's definitely a lot better than Quantum of Solace. I think it is probably the strongest Daniel Craig starring James Bond film.
Yeah. I can give it more towards like the 4.3. It was really good. It was just one of those things where it's almost like the same... I'm waiting for that epicness again, like... Yet again, I still didn't get it. Like, when we did Quantum Solstice, yes, they blew up a fucking building. That was okay, but we've seen him blow up a fucking building. Mm-hmm. He walks into a building and it blows up. It's just one of those things where it's James fucking Bond. But yet, I mean, there were still a couple more things that could have been introduced into this film. And I don't know how to say it. I just don't know how to explain what else I could say really towards it to say. Just
without spoiling everything.
Go see it yourself and then... just think to yourself, ask the question, just go, what could have been added to make that movie just a little bit better and to cut out that little bit of, like, drag-on scene? I mean, I know that they're trying to create drama and all that other aspect and tension, but yet sometimes there are that whole aspect that they could have cut something out there. Or they probably did.
You never know.
Never know. Which was explained in my One of the Dead.
Yes.
I mean, that's one of those things where they did a lot of editing to that movie.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's just how it goes. That's how Hollywood runs, so...
Yep. Edit it until the people upstairs are happy.
Yeah. Too bad they couldn't just be director cuts.
Sometimes that happens. Sometimes you get the director's cut. We got the Richard Donner cut of Superman 2 before they fired him and replaced him with some other director.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, we can end this now.
Okay.
Kill it.
So, remember, visit our website at b3crew.com for recent news, reviews, podcasts, episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bash Brigade. If you have any questions, comments, anything you want us to talk about, you can reach us at thebastards@bostonbashbrigade.com. I'm on Twitter at king_baby_duck. Blue Onyx is under Blue Onyx. You can like our Tumblr on b3crew.tumblr.com. And I think that's about it.
We're on facebook.com/bostonbashbrigade. And I've been... happily, we're over at like 120 now of like people that have liked us now.
Yes.
I want more. If you hear this right now, go to our Facebook and like us. And then tell us that you listened to it and you said you liked it. So I really want people to start interacting with us a bit more. I mean, how many people are getting now? 12? 12 now? 12K? 12,
yeah.
12K a week. Come on, people. Get us in there. Come on. So anyways, but more or less, we're on facebook.com/BostonBassBrigade. Or otherwise, just type Boston Bass Brigade at the top of your search bar, and you should be able to find us by your little symbol.
Mm-hmm. So remember, this coming November 18th, the new Nintendo system comes out. We should have some coverage here and there regarding that. Yes. We might be teaming up with one of our favorite Dudes Issues guy for a possible video. We're going to be chatting sometime next week and see if we can pull something together like that.
Maybe.
And maybe we might have some other things coming up too. So, yeah, just keep an eye on the website, the Twitter, the
Facebook. Hopefully we'll operate it sometime too.
Yes. So, until next time, this is King Baby Duck.
This is Blue Water.
Reminding you, you don't have to be from Boston to be a master, but it sure helps.
Yeah.
I'd like it shaken, not stirred.
Sit on it, Rotate.